Barry Herbin. I'm going to talk about the geology of Holden and the big picture. My name's Gary Herbin, and I'm going to talk today about geology of Holden and you and why you should care. And so just to start off, who I am, I was grew up in New York, and I went to University of Delaware for 4 years in undergraduate school and got my bachelor's in geology, and then and pursued my interest in geology and having an interest in the evolution of mountain ranges. The North Cascade Range seemed to be a place to find some challenging geology, and so I wound up in Washington. I tried something different. But so this is part of my thesis research. So I'm about halfway through my master's degree program. So what I'd like to do today is just try and give you some feeling for what the goal of the project is relative to the Earth and how it fits into the real big picture of the Earth, and then how it fits in even more geologically relative to Cascade geology, and then try and maybe talk about what I found and hope to continue to find, come into that, and then some words on what you might see hiking around when you're doing hikes in the area. So what brings me here to look at the rocks for the summer? And basically, I and other geologists have an interest in how these mountain ranges and that you see all over the United States and the world, such as the Cascades and the Coast Ranges of California, and what kind of forces inside the Earth are acting today and have been acting to produce these mountain ranges, and where does kind of come from. And so what a geologist does is to look at the rocks and try and, as little recorders, and try and work backwards from them to interpret this. But to give you a feeling for how this fits into, where these forces come from, I'd like to review a little bit about the theory of plate tectonics. I'm not sure you probably heard it along the way. The theory of plate tectonics is that the Earth is composed of a number of large, rigid plates, the crust, and they're all moving in different directions and at different speeds. And as you can see on this map, it shows these red lines up here. This is the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, which you've seen on the floor of the ocean's map quite a bit. And here's one in the Pacific Ocean. And what these are spreading centers where plates, these are, it's one type of plate boundary. But so there's numerous plates moving around, and there's three types of plate boundaries where these plates have connect, and there's divergent plate boundaries where the plates are created, and that's where new material is at, and that's at the ridges. So this is where this red is the youngest material, and it's being added at the ridges, and then it's flowing away from these things, and you can see that Africa and South America is moving away from each other. And the other, then there's plate boundaries where the plates just slide next to each other, like you have in California, and that's where you get things such as the San Andreas Fault and structures like that, where these large structures are moving and producing those great earthquakes in California. And then there's two types of destructive plate margins that produce the mountain ranges that we see around the world, and those are where you get two continents collide, and that's what we see in the case of the Indian Plate. You see, this is its old trail. It started down here and trucked up and crashed into the rest of Asia up here, and that's where you get the Himalayas. And so you get two continents colliding together there, and they're going up quite rapidly because neither one can go beneath the other. And that brings me to the last type of margin, which what we'll be dealing with is where you get an oceanic plate, which is more dense than a continental plate, and the oceanic plate dives beneath the continent. And so this is what we see up here along the coast of Washington. This is an old piece of an old oceanic plate that used to encompass most of the Pacific, but has moved along and it's on its way beneath the continent as well. And but But meanwhile, this is what we're seeing over here is, this is not a very good map, it's kind of hard to see, but here's Seattle up here, and here's California. But you're getting this subducting plate where the more dense oceanic plate is going beneath the less dense continental plate and producing all your cascade volcanoes. And that's where you get the forces that are producing, you know, down here, or where you get these forces producing these present mountain ranges, present volcanic mountain ranges that you see, like in South America and Chile, there's a lot of volcanic activity. But that gives us, knowing where the plates are going from today, helps, well, it's pretty much an east-west movement of this plate here. This plate is moving pretty much east-west. This is Washington right here, and it's pretty much moving east-west, and that gives us, so we know that these volcanoes and the current uplift of the mountain range is pretty much responsible to that plate. But as we can see, the Cascades are, the mountains themselves are a lot more complex than that, and we've seen the rocks contain a much more longer, complex history. And that brings in the concept of Chilotti time, and understanding, again, what we want to understand then further is, in more details, how the mountain ranges have evolved over time, and what kind of forces have been acting upon them throughout its, in however many hundreds of millions of years it's been forming. And so this is where Holden comes in. Okay. So I'm trying to understand, so what the geologist does is goes out and looks at the compositions of the rocks he sees in an area such as Cascades, and the orientations of the minerals, and tries to interpret the environments, the pressures and temperatures from the compositions, and the orientation of the forces from the orientations of the minerals in the rocks. And that's pretty much what I'm doing. And to do this to get a complete history, it's Holden is quite significant and quite rare in this respect, because you get a nice variety of ages of rocks in this one little 20 square mile area. It's not a little for me, but Cascade geology, it's real tiny. I mean, this is the Holden geologic quadrangle here, and this is, I think this is about 200 square miles. But my little area is from here this way. So here's Holden Lake right here, and so it goes from my neck that to about back of Copper Basin and Big Creek. So it's just this little corner up here. And what you see, but what's in it is rocks that range from 220 million years old, which are, you can't see this too well, but these blue rocks here are all 220 million years old. So this is Bonanza Peak, and the glaciers under Bonanza, all of Dumbbell Mountain, and then half of Copper Mountain is all this 220 million year old rock. And then this body over here that's on the part of Martin Ridge is 75 million years old. And then and these rocks, these other bodies are of various ages. And then this rock here is 20 million years old, and it's all over Cloudy Pass. It's called the Cloudy Pass Path. And what I'm trying to do here in Holden is go out and look at these different age rocks. And since the compositions are pretty much the same, I'm concentrating on the orientations of the minerals in the rocks and trying to interpret from them. And so by looking at these different age rocks, we can get you can get successive records of the events that have happened at different stages of the Earth's history. So events that happened after like 100 million year old rock are not going to be found or events that occur before 100 million year old rock will not be found in rocks that are younger than that. So that to have that control on the rocks is pretty much a significant part of holding this field area. So that's why Joe says. So that's what I do. So I go look at the rocks. So what do I do when I go look at the rocks? So these forces that are acting upon these rocks in these regions throughout their millions of years of history, align the minerals in certain planes and in lines. And what these are called there's two things. One called foliation, and then another called alineation. Now, foliation is a preferred alignment of the minerals in a rock that line up in a plane. So it's quite similar to like notebooks, like sheets of paper. You would have sheets of preferred alignment of minerals, and you can kind of see that in this rock. But you can see how these kind of lines kind of define a plane in this rock, and that which we would call foliation. And those form in response to forces orthogonal to that plane. So, and then in that plane, you can get what's called delineation. And delineation is a preferred alignment of the minerals in that plane. So here's your foliation plane right here, and then here's your lineation. I don't know if you can see that, but you can see these streaks coming down the rock. These are quartz streaks, but that they lie in the foliation plane. And so I go out and I measure these orientations of these. So I measure the orientations of them when they're sitting in the rocks, and then orient the sample to horizontal and north, and then bring it back, and then I have a record of the forces that were acting on that region, on that rock, in that whole area, for however old the rock is. So what's so significant about these lineations and foliations is the lineation is particularly significant because it tells us the direction that the actual movement of the rocks was occurring. So if you have forces producing a foliation this way, and then you see lines in the mineral moving that way, then that means that the rocks were getting scorched this way and moved up and down. So, and that's what we're seeing in this rock here. But so to bring this into cascade geology, there's been two models proposed for the origin of how the Cascades has evolved over its last 150 million years. And the first model explains the entire from 130 to like 70 million year history as being related to an east-west event from the entire time. And starting, this is Vancouver Island, you might be familiar with, and it also happens to be part of this little micro piece of land that was floating around the Pacific and crashed into the continent about 130 million years ago. So that starts their event, and it goes all the way through 50 million years. And they base their interpretations on just basically large-scale map relationships. I mean, I don't have a geologic map right here, but they'll look at, they see a map, a body here, and then there's a gap, there's a sharp boundary, and then it exists over here. And to explain that, they use east-west directed forces and to push these rocks over one another. And so it's these kinds of things that they build on and interpret their model as dominantly east-west for the whole time. And then at Western Washington University, there's been a new model proposed that is quite different. It explains an early part of the history as predominantly east-west, with the crashing in of this piece of land around 130 to 200 million years ago. And then at 95 million years ago, there was a change to more northwest, to a northwest directed forces. And they base their evidence on going out and looking at the rocks and the orientations of minerals in these rocks. And lo and behold, you go out and these lineations dominantly align up in a northwest direction. And so the newer model is just starting to get more accepted, and it fits in well with other parts of geology. Like there's another scientist at Western Washington University who's brought back, who is reconstructed this, the movement of this plate, and back to 100 million years ago, and has determined that there was a switch at about 90 million years, where it at before 90 million years it was dominantly east-west, and then it was dominantly north-south after 90 million years, and that corresponds well to what you see in the minerals and the actual minerals in the rocks. And so that's been these northwest. I mean, I showed you an up and down one, and that's something I'll get to in a second. But there's other, what you see when you walk through Koinonia here, that on the floor are these big pods, black, lined up, and they're not oriented right now, but those are all lineations as well. And those, if you saw them out there in the rocks, would be lined up in a shallow northwest direction. And so basically, predominantly the delineations, the orientations of the minerals in the Holden area line up parallel to what they've seen in other places in the Cascades, and is consistent with the Western Washington model. So what's even more significant about the Holden area is that this is the first place that we've seen these steep lineations where the minerals are lined up in a steep direction. And like I mentioned before, we have very old rocks here, 220 million years old. So you're not going to see these steep lineations lined up in the young rocks. So I can compare the old rocks to the young rocks, and that's what I've done, and that's what you find. You find these real steep down dip, what they call down dip lineations, but very steep lineations in the very old rocks, and then only, you don't see them in the younger rocks. And I have some other samples here of some of the metamorphic rocks. It's not big, you can't really see, but take my word for it that the minerals are lined up this way. And so that's pretty significant. I mean, that's a good find. And so that'll work out well. And so the other part of the project is to go into more detail on the actual chronology of the intensity and the changes in these forces and these events that have happened through these rocks at successive periods of time. I mean, these are very old rocks. That one there is probably 220 million years old. So it just happened to be missed by a younger event, but they can be, and they can record successive periods of history in each rock. And so the other significant find that I found here in Holden was what I hope to be significant is this Holden Lake Pluton that I had everybody bring back samples from. And what that rock was, which I also have a sample, is the minerals are predominantly square, and you can see how glittery and shiny it is, and if you look closely at it, you can take a look after. It's the minerals are square, and they're not distorted, and they're not really aligned in any preferred orientations. And so my interpretation of that is that it came into the area after these strong forces, both the east-west ones and the northwest ones have ceased. So hopefully I can get it, we can bring that back and separate a rare mineral out and determine an age from that mineral, and then get a lower limit on when all this activity has ceased in the area. And there's a lot of controversy on when that actually happened, because the people that are interpreting the east-west event through the whole time say that things stopped at 70 or 80 million years old. But they've seen rocks throughout the Cascades, well, rarely, only that are 40 million years old and still have these alignments, so 40 and 50 million years old, but they've only a couple. But you see in spotted places throughout the history of the Cascades, these rocks that have different intensities of these alignment of minerals. And that's another thing we see here in Holden is this body that comes up Martin Ridge is what's it called? It's 75 million years old, and it if you look in some of the rocks that are in the ground, you can see these. I have another sample of that, and it has the minerals are moderately aligned. You can see them starting to be aligned in this preferred or northwest orientation because they're younger, but they're not strongly aligned because they didn't have the time to. They weren't exposed to the forces as long. And so I'll tie all this into a history. And along with looking at the orientations of the minerals and rocks, I've been looking a lot at the contact relationships of the different units. And what you can see is like these rocks that are 75 million years old. I'll start with the very young ones. My data is in a very rough stage right now, but I go up to the actual where this was right here. I was right there where the blue meets the red, and lo and behold, I found a contact which looks something like this. It took me a couple times to go up there to see it, but where you can see these actual strongly layered and aligned rocks with different inclusions and different colored rocks in them. Right next to this other rock that had no alignment, and so that's also supportive evidence, and that's the kind of stuff that I'm mostly concentrating on out here because you can't get that in the lab, and so it's kind of exciting to find stuff like that and bring it back, and so those are the kind of things I look for. Yeah.
How do you get a random sample? I mean, if you're looking for specific things, how do you keep yourself from just looking for those things and ignoring other stuff? Do you take a random sample, or?
Well, I try and take samples that are going to mean something. I try and take samples that are, like, next to this contact where you actually see the relationships where one body intrudes the other, and obviously happened after all the events that have happened to the other rock that's got all the layering in it. I'll sample it from the contact, you know, closer intervals, and I'll sample the rest of it just to get an idea of if there's any forces active at the boundaries that are not active in the center of the body.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really depends on how it goes. But I try and orient my sample so in case there is an alignment of some kind, then I can interpret what it is later by looking closer at the minerals. Like that's another whole issue, is whether these alignments in the minerals are in response to these forces produced by the plates, which we call tectonic forces, and or whether they're in response to the actual forces that were these bodies intruded or were injected into other rocks. You know, sometimes they're constricted and the minerals will line up strongly just from the way they're aligned. And so that's some of the stuff you want to look at in making your interpretation. So to help interpreting that, you want to sample, you know, closer to the more important contacts than you would, you know, throughout the whole body. But so you just want to get characteristic samples of a certain rock type, and then, you know, if you need more important detailed analysis of certain relationships, and you take more samples. So I guess I kind of gone over most of it already, but so just to mention a couple things about the geology of Holden and what you actually see. The other part of my project was to, as I'm contracted with the Department of Natural Resources, to make a more detailed geologic map. Not that this isn't detailed, but because he got places there's no way I'm going to get to, like on Copper Peak, and I don't know how he got there. A helicopter, I think it's something to do with it. But basically, the actual. What I've done is go around and actually traverse, you know, the lower parts of these where it's accessible, and just go up and look at as much of the rocks as I can, and try and find new units like move contacts in different places, or there's different body extensions of different units, because he just didn't have the time to look at it in that much detail. And fortunately, I have found some changes in his map, which, I mean, they won't show up when it's published again, but it makes my job a little easier. No, it's just nice to find new things. So what you see in Holden is, okay, we'll start, like I mentioned, when you're on a hike to Heart Lake, you start to cross into, starting at Heart Lake, you get these very old dumbbell rocks, dumbbell mountain rocks, is what the dumbbell mountain plutons are officially called, and they're really old, so they're very strongly deformed, is the word that we use, and you can see these minerals are extremely reoriented in size and in shape, and some of them are aligned, you know, 7 or 8, 8 to 1 in one direction than the other. So these rocks have been experienced, you know, exposed to very intense forces at some time in their history. So those are the really old rocks that you see that you do see on the trail going up to Heart Lake, if you get closer to Heart Lake. And then right on the other side of them, going up to Cloudy Pass, you would see these Cloudy Pass body is only 20 million years old, and like I've mentioned, so it wasn't exposed. There's no way it was exposed to any forces. And you can pick that up, and you can see that the minerals are aligned randomly, and they're square. They're not squished and oriented. Yeah.
Where did this material come from that was not exposed to these previous forces?
Yeah. Okay, well, it comes from down here. Here's these plates go down, and as the rocks cool, the rocks go down, and the squashing and stuff is going on at 25 kilometers beneath their surface. So that's when the rocks are really hot, and they'll rise, they'll cool and become rigid. But there's younger rocks that are more molten and are less dense and just
sliding up over them,
bubble their way through.
And they're pushed up.
Yeah, and they can go up at fast rates and crystallize only 5 kilometers beneath their surface, and then they can come up all the way up as volcanoes. And so these rocks were very deep and crystallized before they came up. So and that's they're called metamorphic rocks. And the igneous rocks are metamorphic rocks are just changed by pressure and temperature, and igneous rocks are solidified from a molten liquid magma, so these the younger rocks, this is all really young stuff that came into the area probably when these rocks were all cooled and solid and maybe 10 kilometers down, and then this one came up and bubbled its way through it and then finally stabilized and crystallized and didn't make it all the way to the surface. Like these, you know, really volcanoes.
Well, once this material has come above the surface, what kind of forces, if any, still work on it?
There's the forces. The Cascades are constantly uprising, so the rocks are changing. You know, the pressures are getting unloaded from them, and they're getting fractured brittle. So there's a brittle ductile transition, so to speak, where the rocks stop getting this kind of behavior and start just breaking brittle and stuff like that. And that's mostly the superficial stuff that you see. So you don't really see too many. Well, you do, but I don't know. Does that answer your question?
More or less. Helps.
Okay. Yeah. Can you explain the plate boundaries that this area is on and what direction it's moving? Because, I mean, if it's crashing into another plate, wouldn't that also bring rocks up? Or
okay, yeah, well, that's kind of happening over here. And here's where we are, and... this is the Cascade Range, and the current volcanoes, get Shasta and Adam and Ellen's and Mount Baker. And this is where the subducting plate, here goes the subducting plate, and then it's melting, and it's coming up a little bit ways inland. But you get also get these sediments being scraped off of this plate that's going down. And that's kind of, that's where you get such things as the Olympic Mountains and the Coast Ranges. These are just sediments that have been scraped off, so they're more upper level processes and mountain ranges.
Oh, do you have any effects of glaciation up here?
Yeah, but they don't affect the actual mineral composition of the rocks and stuff. That's much later than the history that I'm looking at.
So Cascades are still pretty much growing?
Yeah, they're still going up, but slow.
Well, how long has this basic plate been pushing underneath here?
That's what I saw.
This one right here?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's been doing that since 150 million years. And but its orientations, the direction it's been moving in, like I mentioned, there's a professor that's reconstructed the movement. He's taken this movement and kind of, you know, you can get time ratios of how fast the plate's moving from this, from these what are called isochrones. And then he's kind of flopped that onto the other side and brought the plate back out. And so he can get an idea of where these plates were at, and what where they were headed at different times. It's pretty complicated, I don't understand it too well. But, and that's where he's come up with different orientations that the plates were trending. First they were going like this, and they went like that at 90 million years. And then from 90 to 50, they were predominantly oblique to Washington and the coast, and then now they're going back more east-west, and that's where we're getting. That's where this current plate is going under Washington right now, predominantly in east-west direction.
What forces cause these plates to move?
They don't know that yet. That's the underlying biggie.
Jeez, Gary.
Yeah, why do you...
I had read that it was like the magma layer, that the plates were just floating on it.
Yeah, there's what's called the asthenosphere is a part, I think it's an upper layer of the mantle, which is very liquid, and these rigid plates do float on the... they do move over this mantle, over this asthenosphere, but it's a chicken and egg story of which is happening. Whether it's a push pull, whether there's convection going on in the asthenosphere, pushing the magma up at the ridges, and then pushing the plates down, or what's being more accepted today is that the plates are just cooler and more dense as they get older, so they sink faster as they get further away from the plates, and then it's pulling the plates back and opening up these places where new material is being added. But you know, they don't know where it all begins. And then there's places in the earth like Hawaii where it's just in Hawaii and Yellowstone, which are just little spots that are real hot and always have magma coming up, and they don't know why. And you can see there's tracks. This map doesn't show it real well, but Hawaii has a track of mountains that turns up this way and up this way, and so this Hawaii has been this hot spot that stayed here, and these plates have moved over it and producing these chain of volcanoes, and you can mark the movement of the plate relative to this hot spot. And they don't really have an explanation for those either. They're just,
the other spot is the Galapagos, where it's going in the opposite direction, where you can really see it too.
Yeah.
Hot spot, thermal.
Yeah, it's getting to be it's just such big scale questions that it's hard to answer them from big scale point, and then you do what I'm doing and look at the minerals, and it really doesn't seem like you're getting anywhere either. But, someday they might know. But,
I'm fascinated by the marble and the quartzite, which are, you know, associated as you get into that ore body.
Yeah.
And that, of course, suggests some very, very old sedimentation. You have any comments on that, or
that's a good question.
I might skip it because that isn't really in your line. But
no,
I mean,
no, it's part of the history. I mean, I'm concerned with, you know, the history of all the rocks.
And I mean, you've studied that history in detail, you know, more than I have.
I didn't really think about the marble beds yet, though, but because I had a hard time finding them out on the field in the first place. I just saw them the other day. But they're not that distinct. Well, they are distinct marker beds, but I don't know where they came from. But most of the rocks are, they look to me like volcanic, old volcanic flows and eruption in volcanic layers. And so basically, these sediments, the rest of Martin Ridge is all these different metamorphic rocks, which are these layered sedimentary rocks, and which look like volcanic rocks, that have been deposited next to some what are called island arches. There's island arches over here. Where's the good one? Where we get a subducting plate going underneath a small piece of land. Oh, the Aleutian Islands here. These are island arches, and so next to these islands, you get you get these volcanic sediments where you get a lot of volcanic activity and these volcanic flows being shed off into them, and so that's a possibility of where those sediments might have formed.
Might they be exotic terrains? Or
yeah,
something?
That's a whole nother bowl of wax as far as the Cascades goes, how much of this stuff. And yeah, as a matter of fact, all this stuff is interpreted as exotic.
Which is, what's exotic terrain?
It means that there's different packages of rocks that have distinct geologic histories from other packages, and they're sometimes fault-bounded, but basically they didn't originate from where they were in place. They came from somewhere else, whether it was furthest from the south or floating around the Pacific. And I mean, here Alaska contains all these different colors, and these blue, these greens, purples, and it's been called the armpit of Alaska because this plates have been moving this way the whole time and collecting these different terrains, these different bodies of rock that have distinctly different histories and compositions from the ones next to them, and they all sit there, and you can go out and look at the contacts, like I'm doing, between the different units, and say, well, that's no way that rock's related to that rock, and so interpreting how, you know, the actual history of how that happened, it's kind of real complicated, and that's a whole nother complicated part of Cascade geology, is how many terrains are actually here, because, I mean, These sedimentary rocks, these metamorphic rocks, represent a different history than these metamorphic rocks. And, you know, a lot of the work that's being done is trying to tie together which sedimentary rocks are related to one another, and, you know, how much can you break up, do you want to break up the history of these rocks before actually tying it together and coming up with a lesser amount of complications in exotic terrains. I mean, to use all the jargon, but yeah. So this whole area is part of the Chelan Mountains terrain, and the Chelan Mountains terrain is supposedly composed of all this gray unit actually right here, which is actually what you see outcropping out along Lake Chelan. And it's all of Lake Chelan is interpreted as a whole nother terrain. It's called the Swakane unit. And it's just really different than everything around it, and it's quite extensive. You can see it's gray, and it just looks very different from these green rocks and these green rocks. So whoever went out and actually looked at these rocks first interpreted to be no way related to these rocks. So somehow this unit came in here by some kind of forces, and, you know, relative to these other units, and those are bigger questions that that other projects like mine are trying to answer. But project wasn't really terrain or concerned, it was more concerned. The actual forces in, and I'm more concerned with the actual movement directions that the rocks were going through, experiencing at different times in their histories. So yeah, there's people that are going out and actually mapping the contacts between these different so-called terrains to try and understand their different histories and maybe how they might be related.
So when you tell us that, you know, this piece of rock, whether it's 75 million years old or 100 million, whatever, that's the period of time in which it came into the formation it is now, and it's existed like that basically, except for whatever external forces have played on it. It's, mm-hmm. It was formed that period of time, and it's remained that.
It was intruded. It came in as a rock with all random minerals 220 million years ago, wherever it may have been. And then sometime after that, it was subjected to a highly, very strongly compressive event, and then where the rocks were constricted on the outsides and extended in an up and down direction. And that's typical of dominantly east-west contraction. But you don't know when that happened, but you do know that if they're right next to, those same rocks in different places, maybe 50 feet away, have their minerals lined up in a northwest direction. So it just so happens that this little pod of rock was not exposed to this later northwest event. So you have some control it's mostly relative until you can pin down things like this body I'm trying to date and try and actually get a handle on when the things, you know, actual number. But until then, basically what this data will show is that it marks a change from east-west to dominantly northwest, with the northwest being later. And that's, you know, it's true, it could have happened, you know, this dominant compression event could have happened 200 million years ago. It didn't happen to happen 130 million years ago. That's one of the things I'll have to try and work out, try and bring as close to, you know, try and bring other, maybe some mineral compositions associated with other bodies and something in there.
How long do you expect the lab to take to process your samples?
Who knows, a couple months.
Why are you waiting eagerly?
Yeah. Well, I'm ready for a break from this work. So it'll be sort of welcome. So basically what I'll do now is go back and cut the rocks into very thin sections and look at more closely the actual compositions of the rocks and see what they can tell us about the pressures and temperatures that the rocks formed at. And more importantly, I'll be looking at the variations in the extent of this of the lineations and the foliations and the actual processes that formed these different orientations of minerals. So and trying to distinguish between which forces are related to the igneous body itself and which forces are related to the actual movement of the whole mountain range and the whole area. And so that's a lot of what my lab work will be. And so that'll be kind of fun. I'm looking forward to that. So I guess that's about it. Any other questions? Yes.
Do you ever do any work like with the magnetic alignment in the rocks like they did in the case of Australia, where they determined that the plate had moved? Is that like something that's really difficult to determine, or is that only in a specific age group of rock that you can do?
Well, there's different things that you can do with the magnetic alignment. That's kind of a whole other science of paleomagnetism. And they deal... I could do something like that with my rocks, but It's called what's called magnetic anisotropy. Now, I'm not exactly sure what you're referring to with the anionic rocks. Is it a polarity thing or?
No, I meant Australia. I don't know if I said the
Australia.
Wrong, but they couldn't figure out why that huge body of land was where it was.
Oh, okay.
And then when they started studying the rocks, it just didn't.
Right.
They
exactly.
Didn't come up with the right answer.
That's right. Yeah, the same thing is happening in the Cascades. I mean, it's really kind of a big, another controversy is between paleomagnetism and actually looking at the rocks, because the paleomagnetism says that all these rocks came from Southern California, came from 2,000 kilometers away. And based on, the remnant magnetism, where these rocks, where they're, the paleolatitudes, so like when you go through the whole rigmarole, geophysics of determining, I'm not too up on this, but determining the remnant, the directions where the magnetic minerals line up, and from that you can determine where the magnetic minerals crystallize relative to an old North Pole. So that can give you a relative place on today's Earth, on today's scale, where the rocks crystallized, and so supposedly where they're from, and that's what they think, that a lot of the rocks, it's called the Baja BC theory, where Vancouver Island, and so people are interpreting almost all of British Columbia and all the terrains associated with British Columbia have been slid up along the coast of California, 2,000 kilometers between 130 and 90 million years or something like that. Which is, I don't know, it's a little far-fetched as far as I'm concerned. And it doesn't agree with what you see in the rocks. You don't see these huge 2,000-kilometer structures in the rocks. You see more 500-kilometer shorter distance. So maybe it came from Oregon or, down here somewhere. And it's little, because these rocks, like I've shown, are stretched out sometimes up to 10 to 20 to 1 in a northwest direction. So they... There's a lot of movement going on, and so they can come from a long distance, but chances are,
maybe.
Where did you say on that map that Lake Chelan is?
Lake Chelan is over here. I have the map next door.
Oh, it's not on there.
No, it's not on here. But yeah, so here's Railroad Creek, and here's Holden. Okay. Yeah, here's Holden. This one you're interested.
Is this pretty much the same quadrangle as the topographic map for that?
It's the same thing. Yeah, so Glacier Peak, this is Glacier Peak Volcano. These little orange rocks are little pieces of Glacier Peak Volcano. I think Glacier Peak's over here. And so here's Lyman Glacier, here's Lyman Lake, Sugiyama Pass is over here. Those are major landmarks. And so I never really finished what other rocks you might see around here if you're interested, but here's Holden. So right in back of Holden is this it's called the Cardinal Peak Body, and this just happens to be a little peak of a larger body that extends down into the next quadrangle, but it is of known age of 75 million years, and it contains a moderate alignment of these minerals, so I'm interpreting it to be formed during this, it came in while these forces were occurring, not before or after, and they're moderately affected by this event, by this northwest event. And then up here, if you go up on Vore Pass and Hilgard Pass, you see these real strongly layered rocks, and they're commonly real dark and dark and light, but they're called the Riddle Peaks body, and since it contains so many more dark minerals, it crystallized a lot deeper in the crust. So that's another interesting feature around here.
How could the forces that are now working on these strata under ground, under the water, how could they eventually affect what is now above the ground?
Well, they affected them down below. They didn't they don't affect anyone that are up.
Once they've risen, it doesn't affect them. What's happening below doesn't affect them.
Right, yeah. So these rocks are not getting affected. I mean, this stuff is happening, well, probably this downhill, this steep lineation stuff and foliation are occurring on rocks that are now 25 kilometers down, you know, anywhere from 15 to 25 kilometers down below. And then as you get up, the forces decrease in intensity.
How long will I have to live to see what they look like when they get
up? A long time. Well, yeah, this is, you know, a real young mountain range. These mountains have, these metamorphic rocks that are 60 million years old and contained that have been 25, so they crystallized 25 kilometers 60 million years ago. So that's they come up relatively quickly. 25 kilometers in 60 million years is a pretty fast trip, and so that's another mystery of the Cascades. It's because this whole part of is there's a little core in here of rocks that are really deep, and then right over here in eastern Washington, as soon as you get into the Mentawai Basin, you're back into sedimentary rocks and these surficial rocks that are deformed as well, but they haven't been exposed to these high pressures and temperatures. So we'll keep going. Any other questions? I can keep going. There's also the ore body, you know, if anyone thought of it, but it exists in these in the metamorphic rocks that are here in Holden. And metamorphic rocks are dominantly, there's three different units. There's a real dark black and alternating light unit that you see, and are mostly on the floor of Koinonia there, and these really dark black rocks. That are probably old volcanic rocks, and then there's a light unit that you can see if you go up Ten Mile Creek. That's a real distinct layer, and then there's this real gray, shelly looking stuff that contains a lot of this real platy mineral, and that forms real distinct up on Martin's Ridge, and then you go back into the darker black and white unit, and then right in this black and white unit you see these. This is a layer of real porous layer, and it contains a lot of pyrite, which is iron and sulfur, VS2, and it rusts really readily with oxygen, and so it forms this real red orange streak, and that's real distinct, and you can see it when you cross it when you're taking the Holden Trail, the Holden Lake, and then as you go. Well, you can see it go right through the ore body. Basically, it's the body that the ore body is in. And you can see it go, if you go up to Holden Lake, there's some orange outcroppings right up there as well. And so, chances are these igneous bodies carry up a lot of hot fluids with them, or exhaust a lot of hot fluids with them when they crystallize. And these hot fluids can dissolve a lot of the base metals from deep down in the crust. And can commonly, that's where ore bodies occur. They occur next to these real hot bodies from deep in the earth with these hot fluids that are next to these porous sedimentary layers. So, I mean, to me, that's what it looks like might be happening. But I'm gonna have to look into more detail about that because nobody's really said that yet. They've said other things. And also the the minerals in these in the I have a sample of some, I don't know if it's got the actual ore in it. It's got a lot of stuff that looks like it should be, but they're actually deformed as well. So basically these rocks, the ore body was here. These mineralization occurred before the northwest. Well, not all of it, but before it ended. I don't think so. No, I think I'm done. It's about one more day. Thank you.